Welcome and thank you for joining us on the Stay Healthy South Sound podcast, where we want to give you tips on staying healthy and even expose common myths about health and aging so you can enjoy a healthier and active life in the amazing South Sound. Brought to you by Dr. Jennifer Penrose, owner of Penrose & Associates Physical Therapy.
Hello and welcome to the Stay Healthy South Sound podcast. My name is Dr. Jennifer Penrose, owner of Penrose & Associates Physical Therapy, and I want to welcome you to the podcast. And today, I'm going to be talking to you about low back pain and degenerative disc disease, herniated discs and stenosis, and a whole lot more. It'll be good. I will also dive into my own personal story on that. So yes, I have been a patient with that myself. And spoiler alert, ended up having to go down the surgical route, which, as you probably know, most of us physical therapists, it's just such almost taboo to be a surgical patient because we really want to avoid surgery at all costs. So I talked to you about that road that I went on and where I'm at today with that as well. So let's dive in. Low back pain, pretty much all of us will have back pain at one point or another. It's a pretty prevalent condition in our society and is one of the number one things we see at our clinic. And the medical approach is trying to find the source of your low back pain, right? And there are so many different sources that can cause pain in your low back. So just because your pain is there and you can put your finger on it doesn't mean that what is right under your finger is the source of the pain. And I think we're familiar with that by now. We know if we get pain in our arm, that that could be actually a heart attack. So just because you have pain somewhere doesn't mean that's the source. So for back pain, things that can cause back pain, the discs can be guilty. The SI joints, which is your sacroiliac joint. It's where the sacrum meets your ilium, part of your pelvis, part of your hip. Facet joints, which are in your spine and they kind of move in certain ways to allow you to bend and rotate. Muscles, so muscle strain can cause back pain. Here's a mouthful of a term for you. Spondylolisthesis is another cause of back pain. And that's where one vertebrae is slipping forward on another. And it's an instability issue in the spine. And then there's stenosis, which is a narrowing where the nerve travels. So that hole called your neural foramen, where the nerve is leaving the spinal cord and then going down your leg, that foramen that it travels through, it can get more narrow over time. So that's what stenosis is. And so there's not a whole lot of room for that nerve. It's easy to get pinched. Compression fractures in the vertebral column. And that's, you know, if you have soft bone, you really, really need to know how to move correctly, lift correctly, do life correctly, how to make a bed, dishwasher, emptying the dishwasher, picking up your shoes. You really, really, really need to know how to move your spine without putting it at risk for a compression fracture pain. Believe it or not, your hips can refer pain to the back of your pelvis and where people sometimes point to as low back pain. So all of that to show you when we evaluate somebody for back pain that is coming to us, we have a lot of things, a lot of structures to consider, a lot of movements to go through that help us delineate which structure it is, where it's coming from. We do a lot of the same tests. They're called orthopedic special tests and neurological testing that an orthopedic surgeon would do or a neurological surgeon or a neurologist would do. We are trained to take people through those tests and exams and an evaluation to make sure they're appropriate to be seeing us for physical therapy, because sometimes we've seen people where they really do need to start with imaging or they really do need to see the ortho surgeon or the neurosurgeon. And so we are, that is part of our scope of practice, is to take people through these tests to figure out what is going on and also are they appropriate for physical therapy. And maybe they also need another specialist at the same time. That is kind of the approach. And there's just lots of structures to be aware of that can create low back pain. Now, I want to dive into discs a little bit more. I think most people have heard about the disc is made up, it has a kind of an inner area of the disc, kind of the nucleus, if you will. And that's kind of more like a, a jelly substance, you know, kind of like you can think of toothpaste in a toothpaste tube, right? And then around it is the annulus, which is kind of tougher fibers, which is good because we want those to hold up under stress. And you can tear some of the annular fibers when you have a muscle, like a low back strain. So if you lifted something inappropriately and had a pulled a muscle, well, even deeper than that, you could have potentially torn some of the annular fibers of your discs in your back. And then over time, what can happen with bad lifting, poor sitting habits, posture, you can start to, those fibers can be stretched and the nucleus or the jelly material can kind of start to ease out. So that's kind of, if you've heard the term disc protrusion, disc herniation, so think of squeezing that toothpaste out of a toothpaste tube. Are you going to get that toothpaste back in the tube? Nope. Same thing happens when you herniate a disc. If it's herniated, you're not going to get that material, that kind of nucleus material of the disc back in. Not going to happen. Instead, you're left with two options. Your body can absorb that material over time. And the key word is time, because this could take a couple years, depending on how big the herniation is. Or you can have them do a surgical procedure where they remove that herniated material so it's not sitting on a nerve, creating all the problems down your leg. So this is where I'm going to enter in on my story a little bit. I was a collegiate tennis player. And with tennis, if you've watched any tennis in your life, there's a fair amount of rotation that can happen. And I was one of those players that would often hit the ball a little late. And as a result, I would twist a little bit too much in my back is kind of what happened. If I could have learned to adjust and hit earlier with the ball more out in front of me, I would have been able to rotate more effectively in my hips and not take as much of a beating in my back. So, you know, it wasn't intentional as I was learning as a teenager how to play like that. I didn't understand that that's what repercussions would have on my spine. But in college, I had my first couple episodes of a back strain, which likely involved the annular fibers of one of my discs. And then you put into the fact that I got older and I got into running and really enjoyed it. And you combine kind of an old disc injury and pushing your limits physically. And I ended up herniating a disc L5-S1 pretty good on the right side. It was a 13 millimeter herniation, which is really huge for those that want to know. But what happens when you herniate the disc material, even a protrusion, can start to hit the nerve and irritate the nerve and make that area inflamed. There's pressure on the nerve. And so there's pain and numbness and tingling that start to happen down your leg. And this can kind of, it can be gradual because when that pressure starts on the nerve doesn't immediately have effects in terms of kind of giving you feedback right away. There's kind of a delayed response and then it gets worse over time. And that's what happened. I ran a half marathon at the Gorge and it was a hilly course, did really well. And then basically about 2 weeks later, my leg just, everything went downhill, like the pain, the numbness, the tingling, the ache. And there was some back pain, but the leg pain was the worst. And that was because that herniated disc was, that material was sitting on the nerve. So definitely I was trying the things I know for physical therapy, saw a doctor and had the MRI. And obviously we could see what was going on. It was very obvious. The nerve, you couldn't even hardly see it. It was so obliterated by the amount of disc material that was there. So it was, and it was a doctor who wasn't a surgeon. And I chose a doctor that wasn't a surgeon on purpose because I had no intention of having surgery. And he basically was like, well, normally I advise people to try and wait this out and let the body absorb the material, but this is to such an extent that that's not going to happen in a short amount of time. And, you know, I knew that. And getting an injection wasn't really going to help either. It was just kind of beyond that point. So I was also getting to the point where I couldn't feel my leg at times, or even sometimes not sure if I had to go to the bathroom. And so you never want the disc to start causing problems with bladder and bowel function. You don't want to be in emergency surgery if you can avoid it. So I went ahead and scheduled the microdiscectomy where they scooped out that material to get it off the nerve. And immediately the next morning, my leg felt better. So it was the right decision. But I do want people to understand that just because that's my story doesn't make it that that's how I feel about all herniated discs. If they're small enough and we can get you in positions that relieve pain down your leg and you get on the right medical management. So I did try muscle relaxers, anti-inflammatories. I mean, I did give a fair shake at trying to recover conservatively. And that's what usually I recommend with patients is like, we don't know until you try it. And then you can say you did try. And if it doesn't work, then, you know, the next option. So a lot of mild herniations do really well with conservative treatment and really well with physical therapy and don't end up having to have surgery. So I hope I'm not scaring anybody off. And, you know, the other thing is just because your imaging is so bad, let's say, it doesn't always correlate to the person's function, which has been interesting because I've seen lots of patients where the disc herniation on the MRI is minimal, like, you know, 2 millimeters. But they're miserable. They're just hardly able to function. So they will take that into account. And then I've had other people who have bigger herniations and they're doing okay. They're responding to the physical therapy. We can get them in positions of relief. The pain isn't in their leg when we get them in those positions and during those stretches. And they're after the session, they maintain the relief for a while. So it is possible that you can recover without the surgery. But there are some times when our bodies just don't want to respond the way we want them to. And we don't always get to pick. So, you know, certainly I gave it a full-fledged effort for a couple months and it just wasn't going to respond the way that we were wanting it to. So I hope that is somewhat encouraging and not that I'm saying that surgery is the answer because I certainly didn't want to go down that road. Afterwards, because I do get people asking, you know, how am I doing and was it the right decision? And that was back in 2013. It was the right decision. I do not have back pain on a daily basis. I don't have pain down my leg on a daily basis. I am very active. I do a strength training routine, core, planks, lunges, squats. I can run. I don't usually do more than a 5K anymore. And that's fine. Probably more of a time factor. I enjoy the full body strengthening and the benefits that that gives me so that I can do life with my kids, like skiing and paddleboarding and kayaking and those kinds of things. Full body strengthening for me is more important than being able to run farther than a 5K at this stage of my life. And I think variety is good, you know, for exercise. It prepares you for all kinds of activities and things that you may want to be doing, whether that's yard work or whether it's kayaking or whether that's skiing. So I am very active and there are definitely things I avoid. I don't lift very heavy things. I am strategic with that and I don't lift too much. So if I needed to move, if we were going to move house, like our house to a different house, I wouldn't mind packing things up and moving some boxes that are like 20 pounds or less, but I certainly am not going to do awkward pieces or heavy things that could jeopardize my spine because I am vulnerable. And I know that. And so I'm not going to put myself in a position where I might cause an injury. I don't need to go down that road again. Those that have been down a road of injury, I think there's a kind of just a pause of like, okay, I probably could get away with this. Maybe I could get away with this, but is it worth it? What if it doesn't go well? I feel strong and I feel good and I know my limitations is kind of where I'm at with it. And so I hope that helps those of you listening. It certainly was quite the journey. I gave you sort of the brief version there, but that's okay. You don't need to hear the whole thing. And it certainly, I had my moment of questioning and frustration and anger, sadness, the whole bit. And I think that's normal for any of us to go through when we're kind of experiencing a loss on some level of what our abilities once were. And I think it's healthy to acknowledge that and healthy to process that. and then come to terms with what you can do and focus on what decisions you'll make going forward for your health. And so that's where that story kind of full circle where I landed. Now, I want to talk a little bit more about disc degenerative disease. So degenerative disc disease, DDD for short, since we're still on the disc topic. So now that I had that disc herniation that was quite large and a microdiscectomy where they take that material out, I am left with a disc is hardly there, right? Because I lost a lot of the material that was in the middle of that disc at L5, S1. And so I definitely have a degenerative disc at that level. In fact, the last x-ray I had, I don't know, is it 2 years ago now? I believe that's right. There was hardly any disc space left. And the provider was like, well, it looks like it might just auto-fuse to itself, you know, L5, S1. And I'm like, okay, because good, I'm not signing up for surgery anyway. Because the fusions get tricky. A lot of times when you fuse one level, then the level above ends up having problems and it can just be hard process. So basically with degenerative disc disease, I know I have that. And so I keep my hips as mobile as possible. So when your hips move better, the more flexible they are, the less stress on your spine. So when we evaluate people, we definitely look at hip mobility and try to figure out, okay, let's get your hips moving better so they can take more of the load, which they're designed to do, by the way, and let's decrease the load on your spine. And so we really work at how to help you move more efficiently so that when you do take load, you take it in the right places, right? So learning how to lift correctly, squatting correctly, so that you don't overload your knees and you don't overload your spine, that you really use those hips and those big power muscles, your gluteus maximus muscles, your thighs. It definitely is something we work with people a lot. And then we ask you what your activities are and what kinds of things you're going to be doing so we can help get those muscles working optimally so we don't strain the back. Degenerative disc disease is one of those terms that just, I don't know, I wish we could get rid of it, but it's been around for so long and it's not going to go away. It's, you know, the parts are wearing out and some parts wear out faster than others. So my L5, S1 is obviously when I played collegiate tennis, I was really over-rotating at that level and caused some tearing and wearing down of that disc back then. And then it caught up with me and then herniated it. So now I have a degenerative disc at that level, but my other levels are good and healthy. So, you know, our faces all get more wrinkles as we go on in time. Our hair gets more gray, but we don't walk around and tell someone they have degenerative face disease around their eyes. So the parts wear out, as I guess what I'm getting to. It's just the degenerative disc disease, it just makes it sound so awful. And it really, if we could learn better ergonomics earlier in life and spine hygiene and how to move, I think we could really diminish the amount of disc problems that we see. And when we get people in the clinic, we may look at their prescription of what their diagnosis is and their MRIs and x-rays. We really want to see how you move because I can't change what's on those films. I can't change what's in your spine, but I can teach you how to move where you have less stress on those areas and can live life more functionally and with less pain. So we do a lot of movement analysis and look at how well you load your spine and your hips so that everything is doing its proportion of work that it should be and not one area working too hard. And I think that makes sense to most people. So besides discs, let's talk a little bit about stenosis. That is a term that means the area where the nerve travels. It exits your spinal cord and has to go down to your leg to give input down to your feet and down your leg. And when it travels away from the spine, it has to pass through a foramen. It's a bony foramen. And over time, it can get narrow from arthritis or just, you know, change over time. And so it gets narrower. And so it's that process is called stenosis. And what that really means is the nerve can get pinched more easily. So I'm sure you've heard of a pinched nerve, but that can be from stenosis. I mean, I had a pinched nerve but it was due to herniated disc material sitting on it, on the nerve. So a pinched nerve, when someone says they have a pinched nerve, the next thought from a physical therapist is, what is pinching the nerve, right? Is it scar tissue? Is it disc material? Is it bony material? Is it a bone spur? Is it stenosis? And a lot of times we can tell based on your movements of what hurts and when, which is why we take you through a movement analysis to figure out what structures are causing the problem. In stenosis, walking is often painful and can radiate into the legs. So we want to figure out how we can affect posture and flexibility around the areas up in the upper back, in the hips, because if we can improve those, it often decreases stress where the stenosis is happening at. So hopefully that gives you a little bit of input on low back pain, discs, stenosis, pinched nerves. We often, when we work with people, really try to figure out how they move with their hips, kind of what I talked about, and teach you how to do a hip hinge so that when you're bending over, you keep your spine completely straight. This would protect you from compression fractures. So if you have soft bone, you need to learn how to hip hinge. It protects your back, protects your knees so that you don't overload your knees with squatting. So that's a real critical element to learn how to do, I just think, long-term for spine health. I think it's important to cover some myths that people have about low back pain and just some back things that I hear from time to time. I think I already covered the one, like, back injuries are rare. Like, that's a myth. They're fairly common. Another myth is you need a flexible back. People keep thinking they need to stretch their back and stretch their back to help their problem, and more stretching is better. That's what I need. And no, you don't actually want a flexible back, to be quite honest. You want stabilization through the spine and some element of stiffness there to help stabilize while you're moving and pushing and pulling and lifting and doing the things that you do. And so really, you don't need a flexible spine. You need flexible hips to decrease the load on the spine. And you need things moving. I don't want to say that you don't need movement through that spine, but usually I see more problems where people move a little too much in areas of the low back instead of stabilizing through that area. Another myth is to avoid a back injury, you need a strong back. No, you don't. You actually don't want to be using your back with most things when it comes to lifting and pushing and pulling and athletics and things of those nature. You really want a strong core and strong legs and strong hips, and then you won't use your back. Patients that I've had in the clinic where they feel like they need a strong back and they want to do a lot of yard work and gardening and house projects, and they, you know, I have them demonstrate, you know, show me how you get up and off the floor, show me how you lift this box that has 10 pounds in it. And pretty quickly, I see them lifting with their back and their legs are not strong enough to do it correctly to use their legs. So they've just been using their back for years. And most of us have been. So we reteach and people have to work on strengthening of their legs so that they can move things and lift things and not use their back. So that definitely is a myth. You do not need a strong back. You need a strong core and you need strong legs, strong hips. Another myth, I think we're on to myth number 4, bend your knees when you lift. I mean, I know you guys have heard that, right? Like, we hear that all our lives, bend your knees, bend your knees. It's a good way to get knee arthritis and wear out your knees, but that's not it. It's bend with your hips, sort of like you're sticking your butt out behind you, right? And your knees shouldn't go over your toes when you do that. So if you practice right now in a chair and stand up out of a chair, you don't want your knees going over your toes. You want to kind of hinge forward at the hips and your spine stays straight and you kind of get your nose over your toes. So if you're still on your chair and you kind of lean from the hips but keep your spine straight and get your nose over your toes and then stand up, you can feel how you really have to use your thighs and your legs to come up. And then do the reverse going backwards. Really stick the hips out behind you, but don't let the knees go over your toes as you sit down. Nose over toes, both directions. So learning how to squat correctly and really use those legs. Myth number 5, sit-ups and crunches give you a six-pack. Yeah, really, sit-ups and crunches, you really torque on your spine. So, you know, anyone I have that's 50 and up, we take those away and replace them with planks, lots of planking. Planking has actually been found to have more core muscle activation and recruitment in the literature. That's where they hook up these feedback devices on people's muscles and have them do different exercises, and they measure the activity of those muscles, and they can actually know for sure which exercises recruit which muscles more. So anyway, planks is where it's at. And there are some kind of sit-ups that we allow. I call them reverse sit-ups, where you're starting upright kind of and keeping your spine straight and then lowering back down to the ground. But if you start to curve at all in that spine and can't keep it straight, then that you have to stop. Like, you have to stay in that zone where the spine is straight. So we go through those things with people, but sit-ups and crunches is not where it's at. It's also just too much load on the spine. And certainly if you have soft bone, it's the last thing you should be doing. And any kind of spine injury, we kind of stay away from that. We work more with keeping the spine in neutral, but we definitely believe in having a strong core. It's just we get at it with different exercises so that we protect that spine. So hopefully that helps give you some things that maybe some of those beliefs are what you had in terms of myths. All right, we're going to take a short little break here to hear from our sponsor and our special to offer this month.
As a listener to the Stay Healthy South Sound podcast, we're offering a free 20-minute physical therapy consultation with a physical therapist to help us determine how we can best help you. To sign up, simply mention that you listened to this episode and contact us at info@penrosept.com or call us directly at 360-456-1444. That's 360-456-1444. And now, back to the show.
All right, we're back. And now I want to talk about some urgent coping strategies for low back pain and avoiding surgery. So, number one, learn how to hip hinge. I talked about it earlier. If you really don't know what that is, you could Google it. You might see some good videos on it. Work with a physical therapist or a really good personal trainer on how to hip hinge and use your hips and not your back. You should not feel your back. If you're into kettlebells and kettlebell swings, it's not about your back. You're using your glutes and your hamstrings. You shouldn't be feeling your back. Learn what your offending pain motion trigger is and eliminate that. So for instance, if bending over to pick something up off the floor triggers you and causes your back to, quote, go out, you need to not bend that way anymore. You need to move better. Protect your spine and move correctly. I don't bend over and pick up anything off the floor like that anymore. I have a method and I teach people how, but it's just not worth it to me. Learn correct abdominal bracing and core exercises. Sometimes this takes some fine tuning and finding out what method works right for you. You certainly don't want to bear down when you're doing core work, where you're tightening your abdominals and you're really slamming your back into the mat. You're over-recruiting your low back. I just told you, you don't need a strong back. We don't want to over-recruit the low back. So definitely learning how to do that correctly. The core needs endurance and stamina when the spine is loaded. So definitely the exercises for core stabilization, Pilates is a lot of our physical therapy exercises are kind of Pilates-based. And that really develops endurance and stamina and challenges your stabilizing muscles. So it's not the same as lifting like 20 pounds or using dumbbells and developing bulk muscle in the spine. It's about endurance, stamina, and stabilization. The next thing to remember is sitting is compressive. When you sit, that's a lot of load on your spine. Please get up every 20 to 30 minutes. I hope if you're working at a desk that you have a stand-up station and that you can stand and sit. That is really, really important. It's just compressive to that spine to sit for a long time. And it also puts you in a position where your muscles get tight in the front of your hips and your quads. So your hip flexors and quadriceps muscles get really tight. And that pulls on your low back. So definitely sitting is kind of the enemy. And then do not overstretch the low back. Number one thing that people do that makes things worse. So just putting that out there. Walking and adding exercises needs to be progressive and gradual so that you don't end up injuring yourself. So I had to be pretty careful after my surgery. I think I spent the first 6 months just working on walking and basic core stabilization. And then after that, felt like I could ramp things up. So I took my time, did Pilates, had a really good routine. And then I still to this day need to be doing core exercises, you know, a couple times a week. So I have workouts that I just continue to do for core and hips, posture. So definitely think about that if you're recovering from a low back injury. It takes a little while, especially if you're above 40. So I hope that helps with a bit of a deep dive on things. The only other thing I didn't really cover that might be worth mentioning for a couple minutes, sciatica just means pain in the leg. It doesn't really tell us where it's coming from. So, you know, back when I had my herniated disc that was hitting the nerve, I certainly had pain down the leg, numbness and tingling and an ache. And that was sciatica. But the question is, what is causing it? Where is it coming from? Because it can come from a couple different sources. So getting at the root of the sciatica, because that makes a difference in how we're going to treat it and what exercises we're going to give a person versus not. Because some exercises, if it's coming from stenosis, if the nerve is being pinched there and you're getting pain down the leg, those exercises will be a little bit different than someone who has a disc problem hitting the nerve. So you can't just Google things and download exercises or be given a handout and expect that that will solve it. It might work for some cases or a percentage of cases, but really having that expert consultation to walk you through it and make sure you're doing it correctly and adjusting if things aren't working is really how you should see physical therapists. We're like mechanics with the human body, and we look at movement and take your feedback on when things hurt with what movements to figure out what is causing the pain and then put forth a plan that will work to solve that. So it has a method to the madness. I would say the challenging part is when patients have a hard time communicating their symptoms or their symptoms are flared up all the time. So that's where anti-inflammatories and some of the medical management becomes helpful. If something is just really agitated all the time, then it's a little bit harder because then, like I said, when everything hurts, you know, where do we start? So not that we can't work with someone like that. It can be a little bit harder and slower going. That is how I see us as professionals, as mechanics with the human body. And then consultants with the patient of figuring out what works and what doesn't. So hopefully if you're struggling with low back pain or a disc issue, stenosis, sciatica, that if you're not seeing progress, that you reach out and we are happy to partner with you and your providers and your team. Because usually with low back, it does require a team effort to solve it and to manage it and to get back to what you love. So that brings me to kind of a close. And we always kind of like to finish our podcast with, you know, something on the bucket list. And right now in the Puget Sound, in terms of something on my bucket list, I really would like to go on a hot air balloon ride and see things from up above a little bit more. So that's on my list. As for a favorite place to eat, I really enjoy Gardner's, which is a restaurant in downtown Olympia area. They have great food there and nice atmosphere. And I think those are my two things. And then in terms of advice about health, and this is probably just nothing new for those of you that have been on the show or listened to the show, definitely stay as active as you can. And when you are frustrated with your abilities, then reach out and we'd be happy to help see if we can problem solve or get you to a different specialist that can help. So kind of be that advocate for you and with you. So happy to help, and we will see you on the next podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Stay Healthy South Sound podcast, brought to you by Penrose and Associates Physical Therapy. If you want some free tips to implement right away on various problems like knee pain, back pain, running injuries, and many more issues, then jump on over to penrosept.com and download the free report that fits your needs. You will receive helpful tips right away and have the choice to email in for further questions and set up a free phone consultation. You can reach us at 360-456-1444 and info@penrosept.com. You can stay connected with us at stayhealthysouthsound.com and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you next time on the Stay Healthy South Sound podcast.